Hi there. Welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today's program with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 16th of June of this year. Why Artificial Intelligence Has Not Killed Stenography Jobs. This article was written for the journal by Allison Pohl. 3 years into training to be a court reporter, Jane Williams is used to warnings that artificial intelligence is going to soon take over her budding career. Few roles look more ripe for extinction at first glance. However, automated transcription services are proliferating and rapidly improving in accuracy, and more courtrooms are now turning to real-time speech-to-text tools, often to fill in when a human being, stenographer, is not available. The 33-year-old says that she is not worried, though. Once she passes the final speed test, Williams hopes to work in the Iowa courts, where she can earn a base salary of $63,000 in state benefits. With the per-page fees, they can then collect for selling transcript copies and for transcribing depositions. Court reporters across the country can make upward of $100,000. The profession has become an example of artificial intelligence's limitations in replacing human skills in the real world. In an actual courtroom, court reporters record nonverbal cues such as gestures and transcribe through distracting noises in the courtroom such as coughs or door slams. Other times, they must gently ask witnesses to repeat themselves while recounting traumatic testimony. The verbatim transcripts that they certify become part of the official legal record and play an especially critical role in appeals. Everyone needs their day in court, says Williams, who lives in Pella, Iowa. We're a big part of that. The threat is not that artificial intelligence can do the job better, legal professionals say. It's that too few humans are going into the field. A long brewing shortage has worsened as more stenographers retire and too few newcomers complete the rigorous training to replace them. In California, nearly half of active court reporter licenses were issued at least 30 years ago, the state's judicial branch says. Over a decade, the estimated number of U.S. court reporters has fallen 21% to fewer than 23,000, according to a 2025 report from the Council for the Advancement of Professionals, Technology and Unbiased Reporting. That has created an opening now for speech-to-text technology and AI-powered transcription services. Instead of relying solely on traditional court reporters, more courts are now allowing digital reporters to operate the recording equipment and certify transcripts. This month, California Supreme Court heard arguments on whether or not to allow electronic recording, prohibited now in many civil cases. Because of the reporter shortage, about 72% of these cases between April of 2023 and June of 2025 had no verbatim record, according to the judicial branch of California. North Dakota phased out using stenographers this year and switched instead to recording all proceedings. The lack of court reporters is one reason. So is the prohibitive cost of transcripts for some trial participants. The National Court Reporters Association says AI-assisted transcription remains prone to errors. Nobody can take over the integrity that we bring, says Cindy Isaacson, who is the association's president. Others counter that the technology is improving and that the digital court reporters operating it do more than just hit record. They must then get certifications showing that they can operate the equipment and capture a legal proceeding. The future is not stenographers versus AI. It's legal professionals using artificial intelligence to meet industry demand, says James Holmes, who is Chief Revenue Officer for Verbit AI, which provides courtroom transcription services. Learning the art of creating a word-for-word transcript in real time, court reporters say, is like simultaneously learning to play an instrument and speak a foreign language. In Iowa, Williams spends at least 18 hours a week practicing on her stenography machine, a specialized keyboard that she likens to playing chords, which allows her to transcribe exceptionally fast. In some states, aspiring court reporters can spend months or longer trying to pass the tests needed to work in the field. Texas, for example, requires reporters to achieve 95% accuracy. 94.8% does not count, while typing 225 words a minute for 5 minutes straight. Those tests predate modern technology, as many court reporters now use audio recordings as a backup, says Allie Hall, a certified court reporter who runs a training program with about 800 employees currently. She thinks that the industry should consider testing entry-level reporters at a speed fluctuating between 180 and 225 words a minute over the 5-minute period. More court reporters are now working as voice writers, which requires a shorter training process. Emma Guillot spent 10 months in such a program online before becoming a certified court reporter in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The 24-year-old speaks into a sound dampening sterno mask, using vocal shorthand to describe every word from a proceeding. Guillot says that while some people think of court reporters as older ladies typing away in courtrooms, it is a perfect fit for her. AI can help, she says, but has not replaced trained professionals. Attorneys and judges want a record that they can trust. The next article that I would like to read for you today is taken from the Wall Street Journal, the 30th of June. Remote work stalls grads' job prospects. This article was written for the Wall Street Journal by Owen Tucker Smith. After 2 years and 150 job applications, Kylie Clapp settled for something she had not initially sought out, a company with no office. The 24-year-old's colleagues are scattered across living rooms around the country, dealing in Slack messages and emails, but never chatting by the water cooler because there isn't one. Working from her home in New Jersey, she goes days without hearing a colleague's voice or seeing anybody's face. When she does, the interaction is to the point. "You give me a task," she says, "I give you an output." In the back of Clapp's mind is the fear of getting left behind. "The job market is so bad right now," she said, "I need to network." "And if that isn't enough, remote work has ruined my social life," she says. 6 years ago, the pandemic sent Clapp and her peers home from their high schools months before their graduations. Now, much of Gen Z remains alien to the office. And while executives such as Jamie Dimon and Andy Jassy campaigned to get workers back to their desks, remote work remains a staple of the workplace, leaving recent graduates zooming into conference calls. These workers sometimes struggle to connect with mentors or shadow senior employees. "Training junior workers remotely is very expensive," said startup founder Jason Crawford. "It becomes a silent tax on senior time." Crawford's top employees would be more productive at home, he said, but junior ones are not. Recent graduates are already fretting that artificial intelligence is shrinking the junior job market. Compounding these worries is fresh economic research arguing that frustration among employers such as Crawford over how working from home policies have played out might have caused them to cut back on hiring young workers altogether. A recent study by researchers at the London School of Economics found that the amount of hiring devoted to entry-level roles across a handful of countries has fallen more than 14% since 2019. The study, based on more than 400 million online job postings, found firms that stayed remote after the pandemic were more likely to cut back on junior hiring. Recruiting an entry-level worker, the researchers say, is a bet on the employee's potential. So a company's return on investment hinges on the rate at which that young employee learns. Since remote work slows that process, the researchers argued, companies see young talent as less attractive value propositions, preferring instead to invest in older workers. And as a result, remote work does not just dampen young employees' day-to-day experience, it also makes it harder for them to find a job in the future. The implication is stark. The researchers wrote, a persistent contraction of this kind hollows out the pipeline of future experienced workers, causing declines in aggregate productivity, as well as imposing cohort-specific scarring. Less than a quarter of Gen Z employees want a fully remote workplace today, a Gallup poll found last year, compared with more than a third of the older generations. Software developer Darby Vernon of Colorado used to work at a company that allowed workers to stay home, and only a small cohort of young, mostly single workers would come into the office at all. On the surface, Vernon said, remote work seemed attractive. You can roll out of bed 5 minutes before your morning meeting. But she started to miss socializing. An introvert herself, Vernon would realize that she had gone a week without talking to anybody besides a waiter at a restaurant. Now she is a month into an in-person role, and she feels sorry for young remote workers. Sending someone a Slack message admitting, I don't know what I'm doing, is harder than leaning over at lunch, she said. Some also worry that remote work limits the development of the soft skills needed to succeed in workplace social situations. There is a whole cottage industry for it now. Amazon and Live Nation hired influencer Grace McCarrick to improve their workers' social skills in the workplace. McCarrick has recently started selling her services for a few hundred dollars a month directly to workers, teaching them what to say when your boss approaches you at a happy hour. She calls it the soft, skilled school and said there is significant demand from young people. This month's theme, charisma. Young workers cannot expect to flex these skills at home, she added. You can have convenience when you're 45. Not everyone buys that. A camp of Gen Z has clung to the dream of work-life balance. Only 6% of Gen Z and millennials said achieving a leadership position at their company is a primary career goal, a recent Deloitte survey found. More than 40% said flexible work arrangements would be a top factor influencing their decision to take on a leadership role. That spirit has led an army of young people to push back against the back-to-work crusade. Part of the problem, Clapp said, is that the emerging factions of Gen Z are now leading completely different lives. I have a really hard time relating to peers that don't have the same experience as me, she said. 1,000 miles away from Clapp in Canada, 24-year-old software developer Chris Stevers does not mind coding from his family farm outside of Stratford, Ontario. Yes, it was awkward when a cow interrupted one of his Zooms, and he realizes he could be missing out on networking by surrounding himself mostly with farmers. But Stevers likes that he is able to get his tasks done while tending to his herd of cattle and being near family. Economists said the remote work theory of entry-level hiring might be good news, especially if it means the effects of AI aren't to blame for the hiring slowdown. The inconveniences of Slack and Zoom are fixable problems, the LSE researchers argued. On the other hand, though, if the slowdown is artificial intelligence's fault, they said, then there isn't much that can be done easily. And yet, the workforce does not seem to have reached that point quite yet. Matthew Manning, already on his third remote job in 3 years after graduating in 2023, has never shadowed another employee. Manning, like many others, enjoys the flexibility of remote work, but he also realizes that he hasn't been in a job long enough to go through a promotion cycle. He was laid off both of his previous roles. "I've never really gotten to know my coworkers," he said, "and I think it's easier to let someone go if you don't have a physical relationship with them." The next article that I would like to read for you today was taken from the New York Times issue of June 28th. The title of this article is "Understanding the Pitfalls of Using Artificial Intelligence at Work." This article was written for the New York Times by Noam Schreiber. Scholars study subtle defects that may undermine the technology's benefits. Over the past year or two, companies have started to use so-called artificial intelligence agents or bona fide employees, even including them in their organizational charts. Emma Wiles, a Boston University professor who studies how artificial intelligence affects workers, stumbled onto this phenomenon in October at a conference where two human resources executives said that treating AI agents like real employees was a way to increase productivity and to put their companies on the cutting edge. But when Dr. Wiles and three collaborators from Boston Consulting Group investigated further, they discovered a pitfall. In an experiment involving dozens of companies with AI employees, the researchers found that managers tended to vet documents less carefully when told an artificial intelligence employee had produced them. The managers missed errors that other managers caught when they were vetting the work, when they thought they were working, vetting the work of a human person. So Dr. Wiles speculated that managers did not think sussing out mistakes made by AI employees was their responsibility. If something went wrong, they could dismiss it as the fault of the tech team or of the executives who wanted artificial intelligence employees in the first place. "But it's not your problem," she said, channeling the manager's mindset about their own roles. In the years since AI burst onto the scene, many companies have become aware of flaws produced by the technology, and at times they have taken steps to offset them. They know that artificial intelligence models can be biased against certain groups of people, like non-whites. They know that chatbots can provide confident but incorrect answers to questions. They know that the bots sometimes spill the beans on information that should remain private. But as companies race to bring AI into their day-to-day operations, researchers are now discovering more subtle defects. In principle, these flaws could be corrected too. For example, companies could hold managers directly responsible for the mistakes of AI subordinates. But in practice, most corporate users appear to be blissfully unaware of these issues, raising the possibility that AI's promises of increased productivity and vast cost savings could be undermined. Even researchers who study AI may be aware of only a fraction of the problems that the technology produces. There are a whole host of unknown unknowns, Dr. Wiles said. One well-documented but underappreciated flaw of AI models is that they tend to favor work produced by artificial intelligence. A 2025 paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that several large language models had a low opinion of text written by humans, creating a potentially consequential form of implicit anti-human bias. But many companies seemed unaware of this problem, or at least unable to imagine how it might wreak havoc on their operations. When a team of scholars spelled it out in a subsequent paper, finding that the AI models that companies use to evaluate resumes tend to favor those written with the help of AI over those written entirely by people, it caused the attention of some corporate recruiters. Jane Yi Jiang, who is an operations professor at Ohio State University, who is an author of that subsequent paper, said that she and her co-authors were happy to help when recruiting firms inquired about how to improve their processes. But they noted that this was almost certainly not the only problem companies were inadvertently introducing in their rush to adopt artificial intelligence. People are moving so fast to use LLMs without thinking too much about the implications, biases, she said. For example, some companies now use AI to help answer questions such as how much to charge for a product or where to open a new location. Relying on the technology for such purposes, however, can quickly go off the rails. When left to their own devices, humans often cooperate and seek win-win outcomes. But when artificial intelligence models assess a situation, they tend to adopt a more coldly calculating, rational mindset that arises from basic game theory. They might, say, lead a company to aggressively undercut a competitor, even though it risks a damaging price war. Much of the LLMs we test think that human beings are more rational than they actually are, said Jianan Zhu, who is a PhD candidate at the University of Maryland and collaborator of Dr. Jiang's. But the most rational response leads to a bad situation for all in many cases. In principle, developers and users of AI can correct for these biases. Dr. Jiang and Mr. Zhu, for example, found that they could reduce anti-human bias by simply instructing models to focus on the quality of the written material they evaluate and to avoid considering the author. But the AI researchers cannot correct for biases they aren't aware of, and several scholars said the impact of these undetected biases could grow. One way is if future models are trained on data produced by today's models without sufficient care, creating a kind of self-reinforcing loop. In that case, the tendency to consolidate on existing perspectives and behavior seems likely, said Shane Longpre, an AI researcher and founder of the Data Provenance Initiative, a group that monitors AI infrastructure. And then there are the blind spots that arise not so much from AI itself, but from the way humans use it. Scholars who turn to artificial intelligence at every stage of the research process, asking AI what questions are worth studying, seeking its advice on how to answer those questions, enlisting it to analyze the data, relying on it to help write up findings, could inadvertently be narrowing the scope of their work. We don't necessarily notice it at the individual level, said Cecile Steinbuch Trapberg, who is a psychologist at the Copenhagen Business School and an author of a recent paper on the topic. You're sparring with a chat bot. It's helping me come up with ideas. You might think it sounds great, but at the collective level, it looks pretty similar. Everyone is sounding alike. Dr. Wiles, the Boston University professor who examined the way the humans manage AI employees, said that the shortcomings were not necessarily intrinsic to the technology, but arose instead when humans adopted it with little attention to what could go wrong. She and her colleagues surveyed more than 1,000 corporate managers and found that about one-third of them said their organizations referred to artificial intelligence as a teammate or employee, and that nearly one-quarter said that their employer included AI agents on its organizational charts. "We call it Scout," one manager told the researchers in an interview, referring to an AI agent. "It's technically an equivalent peer on your team." Dr. Wiles and her colleagues gave all the managers they surveyed a set of 5 documents that contained errors and gave them 20 minutes to review as many as possible. In some cases, they told the managers that an AI employee had done the work. In some cases, they said that an AI tool had done the work. And in some cases, they said that a human had done the work. And in general, this stated source of the documents did not make much of a difference in how closely the managers vetted them. But the managers at companies that included AI agents on their organizational charts caught substantially fewer mistakes when they were reviewing the work of an AI employee. People who manage humans tend to assume that if someone on my team makes a mistake, that's on me, Dr. Wiles explained, which is why they closely check the work of those subordinates. Managers also seem to assume that they're on the lookout for work produced by an inanimate AI tool. But managers at companies with AI employees do not seem to feel the same responsibility for the work of those employees. Her takeaway: over the past few centuries, scholars and business leaders alike have developed a reliable set of practices for managing humans, but the psychology of managing anthropomorphized artificial intelligence is vastly different, and we're going out there blind. She worries that the problem is about to get worse. At the same conference where she first heard HR officials talk up the virtues of their AI employees, one went even further, saying that her company would soon have AI employees managing humans. A hush went over the room, Dr. Wiles recalled. "We'll need somebody to study that, too," she added. This brings us to the end of the time that we have for our program on careers today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.